This is The Wine Guy at 92.1 WGHN. And each week we're joined by our good friend, the sommelier from the Grand Haven D&W, Mr. Jeff Crutchmar. And we talk about various wines. We talk about bourbons. We talk about beers. We talk about their food pairings. And sometimes we go on the road and sometimes we have guests. And Mr. Crutchmar, you brought a special guest with us who's going to help us partake of this, this fancy feast we have here. Kind of explain who we have and what's going on.
All right. Well, our special guest today happens to be the one and only Mr. Andy Riley from the Muskegon Channel. And Mr. Andy Riley has been a staple in the West Michigan area. And I'm very honored to have him here. And, of course, you know, being joined up here with Mr. Jesse Bruce, I kind of feel honored, you know, to have two great DJs, you know, here in the same room. Like I said, the story you guys are telling is just classic and definitely priceless. We are going to now sample out some great bourbons. We got some rum, we have some whiskey, and we also have a tequila to go with some of our D&W ribs, some smoked ribs, as well as the red pepper panini.
Okay. So, well, let's toss it over here to Andy real quick, because I want everybody to understand, wait a minute, what's going on? Because Andy is very proud of his sobriety. He's that was the kind of one of the things I wanted you to address from the top.
Leave that to Crutchmar. Okay. Pick an alcoholic to come in and sample booze. It's fine. You know, it's 23 years for me, right?
Yeah.
And I think it's getting close to 40 in this business.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we've developed bad habits as youngsters in this radio racket when all the booze is free and you've got 4 hours a day to work and that kind of stuff. So, I'm not anti-alcohol for anybody. If you enjoy it, great. Mm-hmm. For me, I just got to the point where Seagram 7 almost folded when I quit.
Sure.
So, Jeff has been a great supporter and followed us along, and it's always been a pleasure to work with you at different things that we've been a part of. Mm-hmm. I honestly walk into the radio station today and I think, God, are they hiring?
Yeah.
Because I could use that parking spot
anytime
I'm down in Grand Haven, right? I could just skip right to the front of the line and I don't have to mess around like the commoners with parking here in Grand Haven.
Yeah.
But it's a pleasure to be here, and the ribs look great, and this macaroni looks good too. So let's see what we do.
We'll get in there. All right. Well, Mr. Crutchmar, how do you want to start this? What do you want to do?
Well, first of all, I'd like to say is that the reason we got Andy in here, and yes, with the sobriety and not drinking, he is going to be the gentleman that, as you learned in our past segment, all about how smelling is actually 80% of tasting. So even though he's not going to actually sample these, he will be able to smell it and give his version of what it would taste like on there. So now the first one that we're going to start out with here is going to be our rum. So we have here the Burl and Sprigg, the Migration. This is a 23-year-old rum.
Mm.
And this right here is kind of one of their flagship rums.
Oh, goes in the real glass.
So,
there you go.
Yeah. Mm. So, as you know, Andy, here on this show, we do a good sniffy sniff with this stuff. We smell it, see what's the flavors and characteristics that we get out of it. And then me and Jesse will then go ahead and have some of our pair it. We'll drink it. That's right. All right. So let's give this stuff a little sniffy sniff.
Well, it's strong, boy. It is strong. And I say this in jest, but lovingly, the first thing I think of is my mother's nail polish remover because, wow. I mean, it's fresh. I mean, it's fresh and strong. So I'll go with that.
I get a nice little caramel out of there.
Yeah. You're smelling a different side of the glass than me.
Right. Yeah, I get a little caramel out of there with a little apricot.
Okay. All right.
And yes, it does have a big, strong ethanol, you know, coming in there.
A lot of ethanol.
Yeah.
You can power a funny car with this stuff.
There you go.
Anyway, Andrew, what
23 years. Have they been around that long?
No, they have not been around that long. They have co-sponsorship down in Panama City. And they will go in and seek wine out there.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
I'm going to agree with the overwhelming smell at first of... And it's not. I'm not saying this bad, but it's an overwhelming smell.
Strong.
Very strong.
Very strong.
It's overwhelming.
Oh, strong like bull.
Yeah.
It's not messing around.
No.
Yeah, very overwhelming.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's take a snort here, and we'll see where we go here. All right. So just a straight snort, nothing.
Straight down, all the way down. Yeah. Come on, off.
I don't. I was like, I was telling you, the only time I drink is when I'm here. I really don't drink.
Come on, do it.
Okay. Here we go.
Yeah. So I got that little caramely taste out of there, and the vanilla. Nice vanilla.
Okay. Now, well. Vacuum. Okay.
Whew. Oh yeah.
I'm married to an Asian gal. This tastes like a Filipino cold remedy. oh, you can feel it in your lungs. My sinuses are clear. It's good. I mean, but I do get a little. It's like a butterscotch. Yep. I get a butterscotch out of it. So yeah. No, it's. Whew. Yeah. It's a bad sign when you only drink at work. It really is.
You know, in all my years of depravity and carrying on and everything, I never drank on the air.
You never drank on the air?
I did it one time.
Really?
I was doing nights at LAV.
Yeah.
And there was a big party going on over at the Bob.
Yeah.
And it was getting down to the last half an hour that I was on the air. And I had to get over and catch up with all these drunks over at the Bob, right?
Yeah.
So I opened one beer.
Yeah.
And I'm scared to death, right?
Yeah.
Because I get this thing open. I put it in a corner, and I'm thinking to myself, if I just leave it sit over here, nobody's gonna know.
Nobody's gonna know.
But I'm so nervous too, right?
Mm-hmm.
I spilled it myself.
Mm.
I spilled it all over the CDs, which were in CD carts, if you remember those stupid things at the time. All this, and there's beer everywhere, and I have to clean all this beer up inside these CD carts and all this other kind of stuff. And that was the last time of it.
Yeah.
Now. As the well-professioned alcoholic I was, I would get one step out of the studio and start in.
Yeah.
I mean, that's how that worked on late nights.
Yeah.
But never on the air.
And again, folks, we're cheating this with jest, but he's been 23 years sober.
I can laugh.
He can laugh.
You know what? When I talk to people in groups about alcoholism and things like that, even kids, because I do that a lot now. I talk to them about sobriety and what it was like before I got there and things like that. Great memory about sobriety right here in Grand Haven with Sister Hazel. Fun memory.
I was there.
I talked to them about that, and I say, feel free to laugh, because we do stupid stuff when we're drunk.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it was my problem and mine alone.
Yeah.
So that was me to cure and me to look back on and say, yeah, there were funny moments and there were sad moments, and there was a lot of stupidity involved. Yeah. You know, that's just part of the story.
It is.
Yeah.
Well, while he was talking there, I had a little of the macaroni salad or whatever this yummy stuff is.
Red pepper panini.
And I had the red pepper panini with a touch of this. And it made the red pepper panini, it made it very creamy, made it very full. Kind of heightened it there a little bit. I mean, it's hot. I mean, this isn't like, this is not a casual passive eating type situation. You're going to have a hit of this and go... You know.
Yeah, and it's a good thing we're not doing it outside.
No,
it'd
be
83 degrees.
Yeah, that'd be kind of an issue. It would be. Okay. But anyway, now again, let's refresh what this was that we just had, so we can tell the folks at home.
Yeah, this is the Berlin Sprig 23-year-old rum, the Migration.
Migration. It's got a picture of a deer with a large castle on its hump.
It's actually. Oh yeah, is it a deer? Yeah, fawn. Yep.
It's a fawn.
Fawn with a castle.
Fawn with a castle. Okay. Mm. Fawn with a castle. All right.
Kind of looks like on Star Wars.
Oh, the blurg. Looks like the blurg. Looks like the blurg. Yes. My daughter would be pleased I remembered that. Going back to Andy here a second, because you were talking about, and I think because you and I kind of come from the same school of radio heroes, and we came up, I was a Larry Lujack disciple, guys.
Yep.
Big pipes, smoked, drank, stuff like that. But like in my time, there really wasn't a lot of that. But when you came in, were you at the tail end of that? Was there still?
So I started in 1989.
Yeah.
I think that I got in at the tail end of the really good days of the industry.
The days that we would see and imagine, like, oh, this is what radio is like.
This is what it was like,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So 1989, I graduated high school. I walked into KLQ in Grand Rapids, and I just wanted to be an intern, right?
Mm-hmm.
They didn't really even understand what an internship was.
Mm-hmm.
I was basically working for free.
Yeah.
Handing out stickers after concerts, you know, putting stickers on cassettes that we gave away and all that kind of stuff.
Sure.
I wanted to be on the air.
Yeah.
It's all I really wanted to do since I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
Time went on, and I got my first full-time job. I think I was making $6 an hour for the longest time.
Yeah.
When, you know, working there. I ate a lot of garbage. Mm-hmm. I ate a lot of people's leftovers.
Yeah.
I slept on floors.
Mm-hmm.
I never had any money because I had to keep the van full of gas.
Yeah.
But my paycheck never covered how much gas I had to get. So I'd get an advance and I'd have to pay all that back.
Mm-hmm.
I got my big break to do overnights first. And in 1992, I had this idea to start this show called The Out of Control Saturday Night. Mm-hmm. And that's what really kicked the door open. Mm-hmm. Within a matter of about a month, it was pretty clear what that show was going to be. Mm-hmm. I didn't understand how big it was going to get.
Yeah.
But in 1995, we actually had everything in place to go to L.A. and sign the paperwork to be syndicated through mm-hmm. Premier Radio Networks. Which was Westwood One at that point, mm-hmm. they canceled five shows, including Dee Snider in the House of Hair, mm-hmm. and they said no new ones, and my contract got ripped up yeah. right then and there. But we were going to syndicate Out of Control nationally, mm-hmm. which is really, I think, reflective of the listeners.
Yeah.
Because without their participation in that thing, it would have been nothing.
Well, as a lot of people know, in my previous life, I did rock and roll radio, and I had a Saturday night show.
Yeah.
Probably didn't steal it from you. I probably did steal it from
That's
you.
All right.
But my take was, we called it Jesse Bruce After Dark. As my thing was, remember Playboy After Dark with Hefner when we were kids? And so what we would do
I didn't watch that kind of filth,
Jesse. I understand that. But what I'm saying was, what we did was, and like you and I were talking here about the audience, when you do radio, especially rock and roll radio, but any radio, like I have that here too, you build a rapport with your audience. Mm. And you know, like I know people by their first name. I've been to funerals for listeners.
Yep.
I've performed funerals for listeners. I have done, you get a bond to these people because you're the voice they hear. And then I just thought, wouldn't it be cool if these people were the guests? Because they get so used to these guys. Like I'm sure you had characters on your show, like probably like, you know, somebody that you could just go, whenever I called this guy, I could get a good bit out of him.
I got two of them on mine.
Yeah, there you go. But anyway, I would have guests the first hour, and we'd play the songs that meant something to them. The second hour, we would play vinyl. We'd play an album in its entirety. And third hour, we'd take requests.
Yeah.
There's something, though, about a Saturday night on the radio, because that's just a different time. It's not morning drive. It's not afternoon drive. It's not a Sunday afternoon. If you're listening to a radio on a Saturday night, there's just something different. There's something magic about it.
I think that between the Saturday night show and that overnight that I did, because looking at 2 to 6 in the morning, mm-hmm. Nobody wants to work those hours, right?
No.
They don't, and it's the truth. But that audience is not driving around pushing buttons either.
No.
They are at their machine. They're at their workstation. They're doing what they have to do, and they are there looking for a companion. And as I grew up as a radio listener, I was doing so much more than just sitting there listening.
Yeah.
I was listening to how Bruce Grant talked to an audience. He did not talk at them.
Mm-hmm.
It was a continuous conversation with Bruce Grant, day after day after day.
Yeah,
I came to Muskegon after the Grand Rapids years, and the boss looks at me and he goes, you need to start benchmarking things. You need to have this at this time every day. You need to have this at this time every day. And I'm looking at him going, dude, you have no idea how I work, do you?
Yeah.
And you're a general manager in radio, and you know me?
Mm-hmm.
No.
Yeah.
We're going to just continue this conversation in Muskegon, and we are going to... You know, even back then, I knew that making sure Muskegon understood that they were better than they were being given credit for, that was the first thing I had to start with.
Sure, sure.
Yeah, and that began before I even got the job because, you know, they were going to fire Boatman and put me on. And I said, if you fire him, I'm not showing up to work.
Mm-hmm.
And they stood there going, huh?
Yeah.
I'm like, no, not going to happen.
Yeah.
So, yeah, integrity came first in Muskegon.
Yeah.
And I think that's been a big part of the conversation ever since I got there.
Yeah. And we'll talk about Muskegon here in a bit because I live in Muskegon too. We're going back over to Jeff. All right, now we're going to intersperse between the drinks and whatnot. So what do we have now?
Now we have this Ghost Hollow Distillery. Now this one here is a straight bourbon from Quincy, Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
And these guys here are coming into the Michigan market.
Mm-hmm.
They just got getting set with a distributor, and they should be in your local D&Ws hopefully by the fall time.
Yeah.
They're coming in. But, yeah, these guys make a lot of different bourbons, a lot of different flavors.
Mm-hmm.
They mix a lot of different wood in their barrels. This one here, just their straight bourbon, but they have an apple wood bourbon. They have a really great rye from some of the unique wood shavings that you really never heard of.
Well, so smell wise, it doesn't have the ethanol that the other one does.
Right.
Very smooth. I get a very, very, very strong, butterscotch pudding. It smells like butterscotch pudding to me.
Butterscotch pudding, that's funny because, you know, I get a campfire marshmallow out of there.
I see.
That's what I get. What about you, Andy?
I get the shakes because I like bourbon a lot. No, this is, This would be something I drink. I can smell the wood.
Yeah.
I can smell the wood barrel in it. I can smell. That's you know what I can smell with this too?
Mm.
A 7-Up.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah, yeah.
You need to mix it up with that?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Until it got to the final days of my drinking, then it was just spit.
Yeah.
You know, but yeah, that would that's really a fine smelling.
Yeah.
That's good.
I took a nip of it here. It is smooth. And then it's got, boy, that tail end, the straight, if you're just taking a straight tail end on the back, there's some kick there. Yeah. There's some, but I tell you what, any kind of allergies or any kind of mucus congestion I have is clearly gone out the door right now. Hoo-wee. That's pretty smooth. I'm going to take a bite of the ribs here.
I just had some with the ribs, and boy, the smoky flavor comes out on that. I mean, Mr. O'Reilly, I know you like your cigars and stuff, but I tell you what, that two combination right there.
That's good.
That is the cigar.
Oh, it's juicy.
Well. Yeah.
It's a juicy Lucy. That's nice. Mmm.
That's good.
Okay.
I like that. It's really nice. The flavor is very mellow.
It's like a firework. It's like a firework. It blooms going off in your mouth. It's good stuff. Good stuff. So, we were talking about Muskegon here a little bit.
Yeah.
And I have lived in Muskegon. Well, I've been to Muskegon. I knew Muskegon. But I've lived in Muskegon now for the last couple of years. And, you know, Muskegon is, I think a lot of times Muskegon gets a bad rap. My mom and dad worked in Muskegon for umpteen years, taught in the schools up there. But as I live up there with my wife and my daughter now, Muskegon's coming back. And it's already back. It's just, I think it just gets a bad knock. And
so,
it's a great little community.
I'll tell you what. One of the things I base all my work on now that I publish the Muskegon Channel, we run the public access television station for the city, which is Channel 96 Muskegon. Mm-hmm. And we've got our Positively Muskegon blog. And we've also got an online element to Muskegon Channel Radio, which is really no comparison to what you guys do here.
Yeah.
What goes on here at WGHN is so remarkably essential for all these communities. We just try to do the same thing, really, on an on-demand TV basis. But with Muskegon, I think it got to the point with the idea that somehow Muskegon was an unacceptable community, and the people there started to believe it. They started to hear this pervasive message of things are not good in Muskegon over and over and over. So as I work on, you know, what mindset do I approach to this media? One of the things I've always really gotten a big kick out of is doing career days. I speak to kids in the eighth grade and older, because I'm a lot younger, they don't really understand media. They just, it's on TikTok. But when kids get to the eighth grade or so, they start to understand a little bit more of it. 23 out of 25 years, I've asked eighth graders what they hear and see about Muskegon on TV, and 23 out of 25 years, they've said somebody got killed. To an eighth grader, to have that mindset, they've already packed up and left.
Yeah.
They're going to go find a life somewhere else. Now, they'll come back probably when they're close to retirement or things like that, but that essential family growing group of young people that we need to have, they're going to be gone. We need to anchor that down and get those roots planted better.
Yeah.
And to show a better side of Muskegon for what really happens there. Because, you know, the next thing I asked the kids in the classes, you know, everybody got shot in Muskegon, right? Well, how many bodies did your bus run over on the way to school today?
Yeah.
None. Well, maybe it's not that bad then, is it?
Yeah.
You know, there's bad things that happen everywhere.
Sure.
But to have such a focus pointed at one community for so long, like it has been Muskegon, it's really been unfair. And the community there really started to believe it for a while. And we've got to turn that narrative back into saying, yes, we're worth these kind of things. And that's really all I do.
My thing about Muskegon I love is how a lot of things have been reinvented. Like if you go over by Third Coast Records and all of those businesses over there, and I'll bring my daughter Ella here, and I'm like, Ella, when I was a kid, this was a rough neighborhood. But if you look at it now, there's a cool record store you can go to. And it's coming back. And like you'll see new development, or you'll see buildings. And then, you know, I'll explain to her, like, you know, this is what this used to be, and this was run down, and and then when the factories went out, so it's got a lot of soul to it.
Even in my teens, growing up in Sparta, even in my teens and early 20s, there was nothing in Grand Rapids to do. I walked past the hole that they were digging for Van Andel Arena every day when I went to work. And to see what's become of Grand Rapids is amazing. To see that Muskegon is starting to turn to a little bit better is a great thing too. But my youth was all based in Muskegon. Mm-hmm. You know, we're going to go to concerts at the L.C. Walker Arena.
Yeah.
We're going to go to the beach out there. We're going to go to the bars because, believe it or not, the girls at the bars in Muskegon were a lot better than the girls in the bars in Grand Rapids.
It's because of the water out here. It's because of the water.
It wasn't the water at all. You know what it was? It was the working class people that wanted to have a good time on weekends. There was lots of money. Mm-hmm. There were great union jobs. They all had a good time. They were young. They were fun. And as those jobs kind of faded away, Muskegon started to believe that they weren't worth those jobs anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
So
yeah.
It's been a lesson in culture. It's been a lesson in people, mm-hmm. humanity. Mm-hmm. It's been a great thing.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. But like there's definite soul to Muskegon.
We love it.
Indeed, indeed. All right, sir. What are we up to now?
All right. Well, now we're...
By the way, Jeff's still here, by the way. You should know. Jeff's still here, but go ahead.
That's all right. Yeah. You guys got it covered. Mm-hmm. So what we got here is actually a Japanese whiskey.
Mm.
Now, I speak nine languages fluently, but I'm going to go ahead and give this over to you, Jesse. Maybe you can pronounce this name.
Shunkashuto.
Okay.
And I my only experience with Japan is that my wife and daughter went to Japan last year and went to Ribera Steakhouse, by the way. Uh-huh. We have a lot of Japan in our home because my daughter is very into Japan, Japanese culture.
Yeah. So this right here, I thought was interesting because just recently we had the World Award for wine that just came out.
Mm-hmm.
And the funny thing about it is that China actually went ahead and with the number one wine out of the whole competition, followed in closely by Israel and New Zealand. Hmm. Now, for those that think, well, what does that matter? It wasn't until 1976 that California wine even got recognized, because prior to 1976, everybody would think that, oh, California wines, they're too sweet, they're not real wine. Kind of like what people thought about 5 years ago about Michigan wines or wines from New York. This is what they thought about California.
Mm-hmm.
Now, 1976 came along, and we had the World Wine Competition.
Mm-hmm.
California got number one, and then all of a sudden, the big explosion.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now that we had the competition just recently, China just became the number one wine, followed closely by Israel.
Hmm.
So we're starting to see a little change now in the geographics of a lot of these bourbons.
Well.
So this one here, this is from just a little Japanese. And we're going to give this one a taste and see what we can come with this.
All right. We'll take a sniff here. Not as strong as the first two.
Very mellow.
Very mellow.
Nice and smooth.
Very mellow. Mm. Oh, that's not bad. Ooh, now wait a minute. Tail end, it jumps down your throat quite a bit there.
Well, that's...
Yeah.
I think this would be gone in 5 minutes if it was mine.
Mm-hmm.
Once upon a time,
yeah.
I also think that it's got to have some sweetness to it.
Yeah,
kind of like a mead if I breathe it in deeply, a little bit along that line. Which, so I get that honey kind of flavor to it.
Yeah,
all right.
I can see that it would if with that sweetness though, I would be worried about too much because I think it would cause a bit of a hangover.
Yeah.
It definitely it's got a nice. It's a little lighter. It's not as thick and as hot as the other ones, but it lasts. It lasts. I mean, I had to my sip, and I still get the heat in the back of my throat.
It's crawling up my nose, that's for sure. I took a bite of the ribs, and very, very smoky, but it makes it taste different. It does add a little something to the flavor there. So, no, quite good. Again, what's this one called? This is the Shunkashuto from Japan. Shunkashuto from Japan.
It's only go ahead. 80%.
Only 80.
It's only 80.
Only 80. Well, there you go.
80 proof.
80 proof.
Yeah. 80%, we're looking at 160 proof. And I had a run in or two of those in my days, too.
So, what we're doing is we're going back and forth between, Andy telling stories and just, talking about the community and eating and stuff like that. So, Now, you have cigars here, and I do not smoke cigars, and a lot of people know my late wife passed away of cancer, and I kind of made...
I knew Thay. Yeah, I remember Thay.
You know,
Thay. She was wonderful.
She's a wonderful gal. Tough old broad. Yes, she was. Yes, she was. But she smoked, and I don't smoke just because she died of cancer, and that's fine. That's cool. But... kind of talk about, like, what got you into cigars? Because cigars are kind of, you know, like, kids today, I don't think they would latch on to cigars. When we were younger, I remember, like, mobsters and cartoon characters smoked cigars. Like, oh, it's an old stogie, you know, a bulldog with a stogie. How'd you get into cigars?
I don't really know. There was no reason. There was
anybody in your family smoke cigars?
No, my grandfather smoked a pipe.
Mm-hmm.
I've got an old amphora can in my bathroom to remember him by.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really remember. I remember going to the racetrack on Friday nights when I worked up at Winston.
Mm-hmm.
Something to roam around in the pits with.
Yeah.
There was that. And then I just kind of, as time went by, it was like, well, that was pretty good. And you don't inhale them. So it's not like you're smoking cigarettes like, you know, somebody that...
Yeah.
And you know, I don't recommend it to the grandkids if they see me with one. I'm like, hey, don't do this, you guys, and stay away from vapes and things like that. But I also explain that this isn't like a cigarette.
No,
you're just puffing on this.
More of an ornamental thing.
Ornamental but type thing.
For people who've never, because I've never smoked a stogie. For people who,
oh, you can get buzzed.
Okay.
I had one from a neighbor the other day, and I was out riding around on my tractor. I have a 79-year-old Farmall tractor. Mm-hmm. And I ride it around in the back roads in Twin Lake, and my neighbor guy gave me a cigar, and it was pretty strong one.
Yeah,
I came flying high again off that. So.
But I mean, are there different tastes to them?
Yeah.
Are there different?
Yeah.
I mean, is it? Explain the experience for if like let's just say there's John. Not that we're advising.
So here's one that Jeff gave me today, and this is a lighter cigar. It's got lighter tobacco leaves in it and stuff like that. This one will be really. Light. It won't have that heavy long aftertaste to it and all that other kind of stuff. What I bring, I like a punch. This is a Punch Signature Robusto, and it's really their biggest regular cigar. It's a little darker. This one has some hang time to it. So after a couple hours you're gonna know, you know, it's like I had a cigar.
Just
enjoyable, and they hang there, and you look cool riding around on your tractor.
Yeah.
Keeps the bugs away.
Sure.
That's what I tell the wife, anyway.
I understand. Yeah. Then do you cut the end off, or do you, like the cowboys, do you chew the end off and spit it out?
I bite it and spit it.
There you go.
Yeah,
like
no
Chuck
time.
Connors would have done it.
That's right. There's no time for a cigar cutter.
Yes.
Those are for the girls.
Now, back in your, let's say, now back in your days when you used to imbibe, would you smoke a cigar and perhaps have a little brandy or something like that, like a fancy guy?
I'll give you a great story around that. So... the radio industry back then was divided into sections. You know, you got the mainstream radio guys. I was called a metal kid back then with the Saturday Night Show. So me and this group of metal kids and some of the big radio guys, a couple of us metal kids got invited to this big dinner at a Morton's in Minneapolis.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting there with this friend of mine named Tommy Daly from Capitol Records. Have you ever been to a Morton's?
I've heard of Morton's Steakhouse,
All right. So I'm sure he's been there.
Yeah.
But Morton's, they bring out the meat before they cook it.
Oh, yeah.
I want that steak. Yeah. I want that potato. I want, you know, and all that. So we get done with dinner, and they brought us brandy and cigars after dinner. The brandy was $150 a glass.
Yeah.
The cigars, I don't know what they were. And Tommy from Capitol Records looks over at me, and we were both pretty drunk.
Mm-hmm.
He goes, can you believe this just for playing Megadeth records?
Yeah.
And we're dipping cigars in this brandy, and we're, you know, we're 24 years old, man. We're just like, wow, this is great.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we did that once.
Yeah.
But, yeah, well, that was about it there.
But I guess where I was trying to go here is... Oh, well, that's a great story. Did you find, like, the cigar would bring anything out of the brandy, or is it just more of a visual or an aesthetic thing?
No. Who cares? Dude, when I drank, I didn't care what brought out anything.
Yeah.
All I wanted to do was get it up and down.
Yep.
That was all that mattered.
Okay. Good deal. All righty.
Yeah, but brandy does go and bring out the flavor and the smoke
and
stuff. So that is the reason for that tip. Now, before I go ahead and introduce this, I want both of you guys to give that a smell, because I smell it while Andy was giving story here. What do you get out of there, that one, Jesse?
I tell you what this smells like.
Yeah. You get a little sweetness?
I get kind of a grainy smell. A lot of folks know, I've told a story in the Army, my grandfather worked at Sigrams. He was worked at Sigrams in Lawrenceburg, Indiana, and he worked down where the barrels came out and they went on the truck. Yep. And I remember he would take me there as a kid, which nowadays they probably wouldn't let you do, but it smells like that. It has that grainy smell, kind of a grainy sweet smell.
Sweet smell,
that,
right?
That when you're putting whiskey in the barrels, what it smells like. That's just my two pennies.
Fruity. And what about you, Andy?
Fruity.
Fruity. A little fruity.
That's good. Well, what we have here is a fresh infused tequila.
Yeah.
It is Dano's, and it is pineapple and jalapeno.
Oh, pineapple and jalapeno.
Yep, and it's not on a stick.
Sounds like a morning team in Kankakee. There you go. Okay. Here we go.
All right. In the morning.
Yeah, it does. Whenever you hear two words like that, I mean, maybe you probably do that too. I always think about like those little like radio jokes, like, it sounds like a morning guy I worked with in Kankakee. Mm-hmm. Here we go. So this is pineapple and jalapeno.
Pineapple and jalapeno.
All right, pineapple and jalapeno. All right, here we go. Here we go.
Now, see, I do get that sweetness, fruitness from that pineapple.
Oh, that's not bad.
And I get, the jalapeno.
Thick. It's thick.
Yeah. And that pepper.
Oh, there's some pepper. Yeah. There's some pepper.
Oh, yeah.
Boy, that's thick, though. But that doesn't have nearly the acetone? What we're talking about?
Jesse, could you use a meeting? I know where the AA club is in Grand Haven.
I bet you do. I bet you do. It doesn't have the strong flavor on it, but no, I like that. That's not too bad. I mean, there's a little sweet. There's a little. I mean, it's kind of right down the middle.
Yeah,
kind of right down the middle there. Let me take a bite of the old cheesy here, and we'll take a nip off.
And I'm gonna go with the ribs.
Yeah. Mm. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's unique. That brings out the pepper. Pepper really comes around in the back end on that. Yeah. That was good. That was good. I like that. Okay, so.
You know what? The pineapple popped out the meat with the fattiness.
Yeah.
And it brought the pineapple out. It really popped it good. And the little pepper, I like that because it gave a little bit more to the ribs. It added a little bit more peppery on the rib.
Yeah.
Even though the smokiness is all there, but it had the little pepper. That's the one thing I think it was kind of missing. It had the smoky. It just didn't have that pepper backing.
Pepper smoke.
This went ahead. Yeah, pepper smoke.
Pepper smoke. Pepper smoke. Okay. So, Andy, you mentioned Bruce Grant earlier, and a little bit of trivia here. So, I hired him at the radio station with a gentleman named Bill Strike and Ron Stevens. Bill Strike worked at Wood Radio for many years, and I inherited Bill's desk, which he inherited from Bruce Grant.
Did he really?
And it actually sat where you're sitting for many, many years, and finally it petered out and went away. But I sat at Bruce Grant's desk for many, many years, and I would always think about like the history that happened at that desk or what he planned and stuff like that. Who were some of the people that like you listened to? Like, I always talk about I love Larry Lujack. He's the reason I got into this.
Sure.
Because he made it sound fun for some god-awful reason. But when you were a kid, who'd you listen to and you went, oh, I want to do this?
Bruce Grant, for sure. Mm-hmm. I mean, Bruce Grant was so popular and influential in Grand Rapids radio.
Mm-hmm.
Kevin Matthews would call Bruce Grant to see if schools were closed.
Yeah.
So we got Kevin across the street at LAV and Bruce on Wood Radio. Bruce, I think, was probably the most hugely influential person in the long term.
Mm-hmm.
Rick Beckett was easily my greatest mentor. He taught me more about how callous this business can be.
Yeah.
He taught me more about how unforgiving it could be at times.
Mm-hmm.
He also taught me that it can be a lot of fun.
Yep.
But, you know, the one thing that Rick did that nobody ever really would have ever imagined of Rick was that when he knew I wasn't home, he would call my parents and tell them I was getting it right.
Yeah.
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 And that meant a lot.
Yeah.
You know, they've got this kid that grew up out in Sparta. He's in Grand Rapids and wants to be this radio guy. And that's tantamount to joining the circus.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
They didn't really know what to do with me when I was a kid because I wasn't book smart in school and I wasn't, I tell everybody now, I came out of the womb ready to be in KISS.
Yeah.
My parents did not know what to do with that.
Yeah.
For him to be able to sit down and go, look, your kid's getting this right. We're watching over him. Mm-hmm. That's a big deal.
Yeah.
I love listening to Kevin Matthews when we were kids.
Mm-hmm.
Eris, I would listen to a little bit. But he always, when I was just a listener, he always kind of came across as kind of conceited.
Yeah.
But then as I got to know him, it was like, this guy is really cool.
Yeah.
And, you know, the first time you're a 19 or 20 year old intern and he tosses the keys to his Acura Legend and says, run across town and get this.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sure.
Yeah. You're the best guy I ever met. Danny Douglas, I liked a lot. He was on KLQ. There was a guy named Dan Baker that taught me a lot of the mechanics.
Mm-hmm.
I still can't listen to anybody say the letter W. If they say W, I punch them right in the face, just like that.
That was a big pet peeve of Bill Strike. And he told me that because I said it one time, and he said, I like you, kid. It's baseball double U.
Yep.
And he said, you sound so much better when you say that.
W.
And you'd be surprised if you listen how often people do not say that.
I took a lot away from listening to Bruce Williams on TalkNet at night when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a guy, too, that taught me an awful lot about radio, even as an adult, named Dale Summers. Mm. He was called the Truckin' Bozo.
Oh, I remember him.
Bozo was
700 WLW
out of Cincinnati. So I got to be friends with Bozo when I was driving in from Sparta to come to Muskegon. And the great thing about Bozo was I ripped off one of his bits.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, everybody in Muskegon's in bed.
Yeah.
I'm driving and listening to Bozo, and he was playing this guy named Roy D. Mercer.
Oh, yeah.
Comedy bits, kind of like the Jerky Boys.
Yeah.
And I got to Muskegon, and I'm like, nobody's playing this anywhere in West Michigan. Roy D. Mercer's mine.
Yeah.
So I started playing Roy D. Mercer, and it kind of helped transition that morning show from Boatman to me a little bit with some comedy and some... The first event we did in Muskegon was actually... A food pantry got robbed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and who goes in and steals from a food pantry, right?
Yeah.
But they cleaned out all their frozen poultry.
Mm-hmm.
So we went out to Ravana and kidnapped a couple of turkeys and stuck them in our barn next to the station. So I learned there that, you know, this town needs to be taken care of.
Mm-hmm.
And if we can fill this food pantry, we'll show them that we're not here just to... We're here to engage.
Sure.
That was that. So
sure, sure.
A lot of that stuff. But Bozo was a big influence, too, there toward the end.
When you talk about those guys, it kind of hits with me the importance of the relation. The car and the listening experience, especially when you're young, is huge. Because in the morning, it's big because, you know, I've told this story till I'm blue in the face, and I'll tell it. The whole reason I'm sitting here, it was 1982. I'm sitting with my mom in her beat-up Chevette. My mom loved WLS, the big 89. And I heard Larry Lujack do Animal Stories, which is a bit I rip off and do to this day on my show. Because Animal Stories is awesome.
If it works. It works.
And I play his intro with him and little Tommy, and he just made it sound fun. But it was every morning in the car in that Chevette radio, and it would move over to 89, and I would hear that, and I'm like, God, he makes it sound like the greatest job in the world. And I was a little kid, and it's the only thing that ever stuck with me.
Yeah.
And like you mentioned, Kevin. Kevin was the only guy. I remember when they put Kevin on MRR, and they put him on in the afternoons. It was like tape delayed. It was so strange. It was like he'd be on like 1:30 in the afternoon. But I was going to MCC at the time, and I scheduled my classes so I would not miss him.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's how big radio was back then. You know, because it's like, oh, he's going to do something crazy. He's going to have Jerome the homie, or he's going to, you know, or he's going to take the jet ski up here. He's going to do all this crazy stuff. And that always resonated with me.
We picked Kevin up at the airport one time. It was Aris and I in that Legend, in that Acura.
Mm-hmm.
And we picked Kevin up along with a few guys from the show at the airport in Grand Rapids. They flew into some executive air thing. So we literally drove out onto the tarmac to get these guys in the car. We're pulling up to go to Club Eastbrook on the Beltline in Grand Rapids. And one of the guys from Chicago came up in full drag for Kevin Matthews' comedy show that night.
Mm-hmm.
And we were sitting there. And this trucker is looking down into the car at this guy in full drag, and he starts making eyes at the dude. And, you know, me and Kevin are in the back seat. Aris is driving, and this guy's in drag in the front seat. And the trucker's looking down at him like, hey, baby.
Yeah.
So the guy rolls down the window, and he's like, hi, how are you? So, yeah, Kevin was always a big deal.
Yeah.
And then getting to know Kevin over the years, too. I mean, so, like, yesterday Ozzy dies, right?
Mm, yeah.
These people that are your idols and the ones that you never, I mean, when you hear their voice for the first time in real life, it's like, oh,
yeah,
that's you.
Yeah.
But when you get to be contemporaries with them and you are working with them every day, you realize they're just people too, you know, and that's a big thing. Ozzy, you know, Ozzy's bridged quite a few gaps in my life, as a fan, as a personality and as somebody in the rock and roll industry. But as I was watching that show, 10 days ago from Birmingham, I think it was, I knew 15 people that were performing on stage with Ozzy.
Yeah.
It's not a very big thing.
Yeah.
So when we start thinking about memories in our positions, remember a couple years ago Firefall was here?
Oh, yeah.
I remember listening to Firefall in my mom's car on my way to the YMCA for swim lessons when it was new.
Yeah.
So, yeah, those memories stick, and they're so important. And it's so important for this industry.
Yeah.
And to be a part of a smaller thing like you guys do here in Grand Haven, it is micro-focused on a small community. It is such an incredible, important aspect of little communities like this.
Yeah.
Don't let it go.
Sure.
Don't let it go.
The reason little small-town mom-and-pop stations will always survive, will always be around, is because there's going to be a guy going, hey, did you cover my kid's game last week? I'd like a copy of the game.
Right.
Something simple like that. Or there was a fire out on 74. Simple stuff like that. I mean, no offense to these mid-market stations, these other stations, but, you know, they ain't sending somebody out to cover the fire on 74.
I'm going to tell you something right now about mid-market and major market stations. I'll offend them. I don't care. There is zero going into them at this point at all. A friend of mine that works still in Muskegon is allowed 28 hours a week. I'm sorry. That's unacceptable. If there's nobody there to sound an alarm, when I mean, and we've got all the automation and everything else too, great. But if there's nobody there in that market that people can rely on and say, I trust him to hear this stuff, you're no longer serving that market.
Yeah.
If it's going to come down to smaller FMs and different things like that that are going to serve pocketed communities, not only is it more than essential, it's imperative that sponsors get behind these stations compared to the bigger ones, because A, there's more value for your money. B, I'm going to bet you that your rate is about a third of what the big guys are. And C, you're going to get better attention and more for your dollar advertising with a small market station like this than you will them, because they're out there selling ads to the Home Depot and Lowe's. I love Home Depot and Lowe's as much as the next guy, but it's pennies on the dollar at a national level, and there is literally no room for the guy that runs the restaurant, Chrissy's Candy, up on the street up there. If she wanted to advertise, she couldn't even touch. She couldn't even get a phone call from one of those great big conglomerates at this point. And that's not right. So
we'll get back to him in a second. But you bring up a good point, too, because you're talking about the difference between what we can do as a small radio station and a corporate station. And I'll go back to remotes. And I, like when I was a kid, like when I first broke into radio, and to this day, it's still this kind of like when you're doing a remote, it's a big deal. Hey, the radio station's there. Ooh, the radio, the signs up, radio station's there. But the way we do them, and I cannot tell you the amount of times over my 26 years in this business that we have done radio remotes with folks and we're talking to them. And I'll just say, so what got you into the business? And then it's like, you know, I work without a script. I think that's pretty obvious. Lord knows if you listen to the crap I do every afternoon.
Never,
you know,
I've never done 5 minutes of prep in my life.
Exactly, exactly. But I just look at people and I talk to them and I follow them. And I can't tell you how many times I've gone out to do a remote and we're talking to somebody and it's just like, well, they give me an interesting point and we'll go on. And I might go like 4 minutes. I might go 5 minutes. And they'll, and when we get done, they're like, well, you know, we did a remote with so-and-so and we had to do these little 2 minute breaks. Well, who the hell wants to listen to that?
Nobody. Nobody.
You know, but because it's the art of the conversation. If you get somebody into the conversation and you just talk to people, because I remember when I was a reporter here and I would ask questions, it's like I would kind of know where I wanted to start, but that was pretty much it. You know, that's where you go, because people will give you the stuff that you need to get their message out. You just have to open up the door.
That's all you got to do.
That's all you got to do. All right. Well, Jeff's sitting over there with cobwebs on him. Okay. What are we doing now, Jeff?
All right. We have the Founders KBS, and this is aged in a barrel, in a bourbon barrel.
Whoa.
Yeah. Now, this is a good, this is a very good beer.
This looks like diesel.
Now, I have been told by Founders themselves that had we have done the cigar section of this, that this is the cream of the crop that goes with the cigar. It makes it taste like a creme brulee.
A what?
A creme brulee.
Oh, creme brulee.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a fancy dessert.
There you go.
Okay, there you go. Well, it's it smells thick. I got a coffee.
Oh,
I got a coffee.
Yeah,
I got a very good coffee.
First thing that
hits
my face is that coffee.
Very coffee thing out of that. All right.
What do you get out of there, Andy?
Well, I know this is a breakfast stout. It's one of them that's gonna it's gonna wreck you if you drink enough of them. I know that. It's pretty potent, if I'm not mistaken. It's got a great name, 12% alcohol in a beer, which most of them is about 5.
Yeah.
So you're looking at more than double here.
Yeah. This I took a sip of it here. Okay, now I get like a Sprite out of this because it's fizzy. I get like a soda pop vibe out of them. But I mean, it's like if a soda pop mixed with a coffee with a tub, but there's very little burn on this.
Oh, yeah. There's no burn on there for me on there, but you're right. Definitely coffee kind of mixed in with a little bit of a soda water.
Yeah.
Definitely good.
Mm-hmm.
I can definitely see that. If I was in Ireland, it would probably be mouthwash.
Yeah.
Funny you mention Ireland.
Yeah. There you go.
They kind of go hand in hand, don't they? Irish and beer.
And the stout.
And the stout, yeah. But no, this is good. I mean, this is good. This is not overpowering by any stretch of the imagination. It's very, it's pretty good. So we have Andy O'Reilly here, and Andy is our sniffing expert. He's giving us, his insight on the beverages. Again, Andy is not drinking. He is 23 years sober. Very proud of that. I cannot keep hitting that enough because I don't want to get like a text. Why'd you have him on the show? Anyway, yeah. We're just driving that home.
There'll be those out there that'll go, I'm sure he was drinking.
We got it on film and everything.
We're not editing on this show.
We just do it in one take. Technology-wise,
yeah.
Okay, from when you started to now,
yep.
Because obviously you've got your own thing going now, and you've got the Muskegon Channel and things like that, but what was some of the equipment that you used that you started? Like, I came in the era of carts, and I had reel-to-reel. I remember I cut tape one time, and then we went to digital like 2 weeks later, but what did you come in on?
I came in on carts, tape, two-track, four-track, eight-track.
There you go.
I can still cut tape.
Mm-hmm.
Fairly well. Mm-hmm. I still have a two-track machine.
Mm-hmm.
I have a two-track machine, actually, that I bought just to get one interview that I did with Bruce Dickinson from Iron Maiden.
Whoa.
Years ago.
The Bruce Dickinson.
I can't find the tape.
Yeah.
But I've got the two-track at this point to get it done. We went digital. I had a very hard time with some of the first digital editing software because I was the guy that could edit all the swears out of a call, start talking on the radio as I'm finishing the tape, and get it on the air while I wasn't looking.
Yeah.
So I was used to very high, fast production of audio editing on tape, and that when the first digital audio editors came in, especially we had one that was like a little console thing, which I just did not get, period.
Yeah.
Then I tried the SAW computer, which the SAW program sucked.
Yeah, we had SAW.
It
SAW
was
a
awful.
Challenge. Yeah.
And then when Adobe Audition came along, it was like, all right, I finally get this.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was good. So, yeah, carts. We used the Marty system for live broadcasts.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. We had a Marty.
I think the Marty kind of lost its power over the years because so much more digital got put in the air.
Mm-hmm.
You try to argue with an engineer over that, though, and they're like, it's just different wavelength.
Yeah.
I don't care. It doesn't work as good as it used to.
Yeah.
What else did we have technology-wise? We had satellites. We had ISDN lines.
Mm-hmm.
Today, and I can even go back further, when I DJ dances and stuff like that, crates of milk crates full of records and tapes and thousands of pounds of equipment, all that stuff. Today, it's all on a phone.
Yeah.
It's literally all on a phone. My studio in my house is more advanced. I'm going to tell you what, and this is no joke. I've got more ability to produce things in my house and my studio than any radio station in Muskegon's got. That's frightening.
Yeah.
They can't produce a 30-second commercial in a couple of those buildings over there. To me, that's a red flag.
Yeah.
And if they have to come to me to do something now, fine, let's do it. I'll help you out. But to have just abandoned these smaller towns like that and not even have somebody in there that can let's say Chrissy's Candy comes, right? I need a 30-second commercial for them by 5 o'clock.
Yeah.
You're not getting it.
Yeah.
Not at all.
Now, has AI played any, influence in that?
It's the first time I'll talk about this. I do not use AI for anything.
Oh.
I've used it once. And it was just last week because I had somebody show me what AI does.
Right.
I'd never seen it work before. And I was meeting with a couple of clients up in Whitehall. And they said, have you ever seen this AI stuff? And I'm like, no, I don't touch it. And they're like, why not? And I said, because I think it's going to, in the long run, be a detriment. And I'll give you an example why here in a second. But anyway, I said, let's have some fun. Let's ask it about me. And the guys are like, are you sure? You're here with a couple of clients. We're spending money. I said, ask it. You know, tell me about Andy O'Reilly. And this thing spit out so much good stuff about me. I was freaked out. I'm like, I never stopped and thought all that about me. Because I don't, Do you wake up, Jesse, on any given morning and go, God, I'm wonderful?
Yeah.
You don't.
Well, not on Wednesdays.
Ever.
No.
Ever.
No, I've never. No, it's usually, and most people in this business usually have some form of self-loathing or like, oh, God,
that's
we're
why
craving
we're, here.
We're craving attention or just like we were the nerds in school.
So I ask it this stuff and it gives me a full summary of my life. It gives me the history of my radio career. It gives me the history of the stuff I've run for office and all this kind of stuff. On and on and on it goes. I'm amazed. And then I thought, well, let's ask it about the Muskegon Channel.
Mm-hmm.
Boom. I don't know these statistics.
Yeah.
And it gave it to me. So we built a little promotional package now, and that was all written by AI. Because I can't come up with the words to brag about myself.
Mm-hmm.
I can't.
Yeah.
So, but back to the fears of AI. This is a creative business. I was talking to a young woman who works in an institution up in Muskegon. It's a big one.
Mm-hmm.
And she's in her 20s. And she said that she can't do 5 Facebook posts a week without the help of ChatGPT.
Yeah.
5 Facebook posts a week.
Mm-hmm.
I do 190 minutes every Saturday morning for 2 different entities. With original pictures, original content, all that, 90 minutes, done for the entire week.
Yeah.
If a 20-year-old is relying that heavily on AI at this point, we're losing artists.
Yeah.
We're losing thought. We're losing people that are creative enough to be able to stand there and reiterate different thoughts about a motorcycle company.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you what, the motorcycle company that I write for,
mm-hmm.
it's a tiny little place in Muskegon Heights mm-hmm. called CC Cycle, and they are in the millions of views every month
mm-hmm.
because it's all original content and
yeah.
none of it is come in here and buy.
Yeah.
It's all how do we associate with your lifestyle?
Yeah.
And if kids don't learn that early on, the whole advertising industry sunk in 10 years.
Well, you kind of take me down a path of something that I have here that I've talked about with the interns we've had over the years. And I remember this when I came in with Bill Strike and Ron Stevens. They were very much, look people in the eye and think on your feet. You can't teach people thinking on your feet. And you know, maybe it's because I was part of that. I got in, like you got in the tail end of the glory days of the really fun stuff. I got in at the tail end of when, you know, small town radio was really kind of driven by that. But I remember it was driven into me. You got to think on your feet. You can't write things down. Because I remember every time Bill ever interviewed anybody, he was just holding a microphone. He never wrote squat down. Nothing. And he just sounded like he knew this guy for a million years. And I would say to him, oh, when did you meet that guy? 5 minutes ago, kid. Boom. On to the next one. And that was a great way to learn. And the funny thing is this business is so much of the stuff you can't teach. And you either got it or you don't.
You cannot set anybody down in a room with a book and teach them how to be a personality.
No.
It's not going to happen.
You can't.
What you have to do is experience it. You have to be willing to fail.
Mm-hmm.
You have to fail publicly.
Oh, good Lord. I failed for years. I'm still failing a little
bit. The last failure I made was in front of a whole crowd of people, and I fell flat on my face. Literally, mm-hmm. flat on my face. I just got up and went, ta-da.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But to sit down and teach somebody how to do that, you cannot.
No.
And the key to an interview
mm-hmm.
is not questions.
No.
It's listening.
Mm-hmm.
That's where it's at.
Because there's a difference between listening and hearing. Yeah. There you go.
Well, what AI says about you guys here is Andy O'Reilly, a seasoned pro known for his voice, presence, and influence in West Michigan's airway.
Mm-hmm.
From radio to community project, Andy's a media force and a hometown hero.
Mm-hmm.
Which, I agree. I can
stop and think of that.
You may not, but I personally, I kind of see that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Jesse Bruce, one of the edgiest voice in Michigan radio through the 80s and 90s, Jesse brought energy, depth, and great hair to every show
he hosted. What the hell?
The guy could make an album side feel like church.
Okay.
So
some of that's right. Yeah, some of that's right. Some of that's right.
Part,
I wasn't on the radio in the 80s. I was too busy being in elementary school. But I was thinking about it. I was thinking about
then
it.
Then he's going to throw in the old man joke.
Yeah.
Listen here, whippersnapper.
Now listen. But it really was a magic time. It was a magic time. All righty. Good sir, Mr. Crutchmeyer, have we torn through everything?
We have. We did. We went through the Founders KBS. We didn't give our opinion on that one there.
Oh, well, when I had it with the food?
Yep.
I thought it was very good. I enjoyed that the best of everything we've had here today.
Mm-hmm.
I did. It brought out the smokiness. It brought out the pepper, but it wasn't overpowering. I could drink, if I was going to drink, which I don't drink that much. I only drink at work, which is probably a problem. The only thing I would say is, this is the most beverage friendly. I could drink this, but, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. It was very beverage friendly on that one. I would go with the Dano's Dangerous Pineapple and Jalapeno. Mm-hmm. That, to me, was my personal favorite. This one here, it was good, but like you said, that coffee thing just kind of turned me off on the ribs. I also had the ribs with it and stuff. But like I said, I would not pass it up. I would definitely, go with the ribs with that one. But all in all, Dano's, tequila was my personal favorite.
Okay. All right. Well, let's do this. Again, everything here is available at the Grand Haven D&W. We've got Andy O'Reilly here. He was our guest sniffer. He was telling us stories about the importance of radio, his broadcasting career, and stuff of that nature. Andy, anything else you want to toss into the old broadcast?
I want to throw one more time to people. When will this air?
It's going to air, we don't want to tell people we're on tape.
We're not on tape.
No, anyway.
When will I be listening to this live?
You'll be listening to this live Saturday morning at 10.
Okay, perfect.
By now, it would probably be about 10:40, 10:50.
That's fine.
Yeah.
I want to talk to the people out there that are listening to this. If you are in a business, or if you're just in your house and you have a business or anything like that, invest in community radio. It is so important to sustain these smaller market radio stations because the flavor of your community is held here. Mm-hmm. It is not in Ryan Seacrest. It is not in Cowboy Dan or whoever's doing the country show mornings now. I can't even keep it all straight, and I don't care.
Yeah.
The major radio companies have given up on smaller markets like Grand Haven, Spring Lake, Ferrisburg, Muskegon, even Muskegon, which is substantially larger population size-wise, they've given up because there's not enough profit there. Mm. And that is not what radio was built to do.
No.
It is built to be a community. They're licensed federally to serve communities. And if they are not doing that, like WGHN is, or Paul Billings Station up in Muskegon Heights, 103.7 The Beat, they are actively working in your community to make it better. Mm-hmm. Invest.
Yeah.
If somebody calls and says, hey, would you be an underwriter for WGHN or a sponsor or whatever, hear them out, listen, and support.
Yeah.
Because it ain't going to, it's TV's next. Mm-hmm. We're going to watch TV turn into Spoken Hub, and everything you see coming out of TV will come from Indianapolis, Chicago, or Detroit.
Yep.
It ain't going the right direction for small town America with broadcast. Mm-hmm. So look into local media online, look into your local FMs that are run like this, and support them because that's how it's going to sustain. It's important.
And to bridge the gap with something about, we were talking about the technology earlier, I think sometimes people think, well, they can't cut spots down there. They can't do that. I can cut a hell of a spot.
Well, I can cut them even better.
I got a little trophy on the wall there that says I cut a great commercial a couple of years ago for Liberty Pest Control. But no, we can do that. I mean, small town. I mean, we can cut it. And I mean, if you need different voices, I can get you a different voice.
I can call me.
I can call him. anybody. Or I can go find somebody else. Whatever. The thing is, we can do all that stuff. We just don't want people to think. I think sometimes people are like, well, I heard this on such station, and we can do that. Technology, it's lowered everybody's on the same playing field.
Yeah.
I can run with the Dallas Cowboys real easy, no problem.
Yep.
And also there's the experience too. Small town stations give you the experience. Like I said, I have 26 years. You have almost 40 years here of experience.
You remember I told you I did the AI thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that forced me into a little bit more because I don't have a package that I put out on the street for people. This is what we are, and this is who we are, and this is what you're going to buy. So with coming up with that AI stuff, I had to do a little digging about what we've got.
Yeah.
So I looked at our 1-year average and our 5-year average.
Mm-hmm.
12 months between 24 and 25, 41,000 active users, 229,000 clicks. That's just on the one website, and we've got three.
Yeah.
And if you look at the 5-year numbers, the Muskegon channel is at 758,000 views, 190,000 active viewers, and video watch. Mm. You ready for this? 5 years, we've had 4.25 million views, 34,400 viewers, and 23,281 hours of content viewed out of Muskegon.
Yeah.
That's on Roku TV. That's on Fire TV. That's on your phone. Mm-hmm. That's on your computer. That's wherever you want it.
Mm-hmm.
That's amazing to come out of a guy's spare bedroom in Twin Lake. Seriously.
Yeah.
That's the value of local media. Nobody's heard these numbers yet other than this show.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't even got the whole thing done.
Yeah.
But that's the reality of what WGHN is doing and other small market companies like this.
Mm-hmm.
Invest.
And there you go. All righty, we'll throw it over to Mr. Crutchmeyer and we'll put a bow on this thing. All right, sir. Again, everything we talked about here today is available at the Grand Haven D&W, and we'll do another gift card. We will do another.
Yep.
We'll do another gift card. All right, here's the deal. We will post the show. It will be up generally a day or two before it airs live on Saturday. All you have to do is like the post. It's on our Facebook page, facebook.com/921WGHN. You go there, you like the post. We will randomly select a winner, and that person will win a $20 gift card to Grand Haven D&W, and they can go there and get anything they want. You want to get gas, you can get anything in the store, you can do anything like that. I believe we've come to the end of our journey, and Andy, thank you so much for coming in. You and I have crossed paths many times.
Happy to come in and sit and chat for a while. It's great, man.
This is the first time we've ever done something on the air together. I greatly appreciate you coming in. Mr. Crutchmeyer, thank you very much for coming in as well. And this is The Wine Guy on 92.1 WGHN, where every pour tells a story.